From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made with a list published in June of 2017. The Democrat and Chronicle published a list of the top 10 Uber destinations for the first 6 months that the service was offered in our region. The airport made the number one slot. Slots 2 through 10 went to a handful of bars, the bus station, the train station, and a local college. That month, Uber released a statement reading, quote, "In 6 short months, Uber has helped New Yorkers earn money on their own schedules, move around their communities with ease, and for those who choose to drink, get home safely. It has been an exciting ride, and we look forward to the years to come," end quote. Now, nearly 7 years later, ride sharing is, of course, still going strong in New York State, and many drivers have shifted to driving more hours in their weekly schedules. But the New York Times recently reported that Uber drivers say they are struggling. Drivers in New York City cited inflation and a blocked raise as the reason it has become unsustainable for some of them, but change is in the works now. According to NPR, Uber and Lyft will pay drivers $328 million in total back pay as part of a settlement with the Attorney General's office over allegations that the companies shortchanged drivers for a period of about 4 years. That settlement also includes a minimum wage of $26 an hour during times drivers are driving, plus sick leave. This hour, we're talking with local drivers, and we'll talk to some in the business community. We're going to talk about the state of ride-sharing services and whether some of the predicted changes in our community have come true. Let me welcome them now. Lakeisha Smith is an Uber and Lyft driver, primarily Lyft, Uber as well recently. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Jessica Fleming, who has been primarily an Uber driver, but also some Lyft in your schedule. Is that right?
Yes.
Great to have you. Thank you for being here, Jess. And I want to ask both of our guests for just kind of the quick overview of how long you've been doing this, and then we're going to kind of get into some of the specifics about how you're paid, how your experience has been, what you've experienced on the road. Lakeisha, how long you've been doing this?
So I've been doing Lyft actually for 5.5 years. I looked at my account. I think I'm at 7,000 something rides. I primarily started over the summer just to pick up some extra income because I was doing substitute teaching. So I picked it up in the summer just to kind of get some more income. And I've been doing it actually more so the past year and a half on a regular basis as I have a full-time gig as a personal trainer with my business, Inspired by Fitness. So I do this a couple days a week. And then Wednesdays and Fridays, I try to pick up more 8-hour days because I don't have classes those days. So on the other days, I do maybe 4.
Primarily driving what time of day?
So primarily, I start out after my class at 7. So from 7 to 11, Monday, Tuesdays, I'll do 4 hours. And then Wednesdays, I'll try to do all day, which range from pretty much 7, 8 o'clock until maybe 9, 10. It depends on how I feel. Depends on the day. Depends on what I have to do in the morning. So it rarely depends.
Okay. And Jess, how long have you been doing this?
So I also started driving Uber as extra income for my full-time job at the time. And I'm also a mom to kids with special needs. So my full-time job, it was hard to find care for my children before and after school. It was like a rotating door for care. And also staffing since the pandemic at my job was becoming an issue. So I actually ended up leaving my full-time job and I work for myself about part-time and then work Uber about 20 hours a week to make up the difference. I typically work in the mornings. I try to do like the before work rush a lot. Most of my passengers, I would say, are probably going to work or taking their kids to school. And I work from about, you know, it depends on whether or not I have my kids, but like somewhere between like 4 or 5 in the morning till about 10 in the morning most of the time. On weekdays and on weekends, it varies a little, but I very rarely am driving like late at night when you would have like the bar crowd leaving.
Okay. And so I want to ask both of you a little bit about how this fits into your life and your ability to make money. And, you know, Jess, I occasionally bump into you in social media spaces. I know you're a passionate advocate for a very different kind of economy. And some of the critics when ride-sharing was coming to Rochester said, well, it's going to kill the taxi union. It's not good for unions. It's not going to be good for workers. The companies are not going to be good to the workers. Are you at all surprised to find yourself doing this? Or do you think, look, it's the reality and it's a way to help supplement income?
You know, I'm Yes. My political beliefs and what I have to do to get by and like support my family have always been kind of in opposition in some ways. And yes, the gig economy is difficult for workers. And I've experienced that myself. There's really no such thing as sick time or paid time off. And that's for both, you know, my clients in my working for myself as a community rehabilitation provider, as well as with Uber and Lyft. And with, you know, I like the flexibility of not having to dedicate a certain hours to work so I can be flexible for my children. But also there is no sick time. There is no PTO. And I have, you know, a family with high needs. And also, you know, you can feel the logarithm, you know, the app itself kind of, you know, exploit these problems, both on the passenger's end and also on the driver's end. The more hours you work, the more you'll notice that your hourly wage is dropping. The logarithm picks up on almost like the need and will exploit it. They will get you to drive for the least amount of money as possible. The surge at pricing also is exploiting both to our community and to drivers, because at least at the times of day I'm using Uber, the people who are using it are people who are, you know, working poor. So they are taking their Uber to work. They are spending a lot on transportation, but Uber still costs less than a taxi did. And public transportation is not a viable option for a lot of people for a lot of reasons. And these surge prices happen like during bad weather or times when someone might need a ride more. The app will be charging riders something like 4 or 5 times what they would normally charge them, but drivers will see an increase of $3 or $4. When you consider that sometimes that these same, you know, situations are dangerous for drivers, like poorer weather, you know, it's not a huge amount of money that the drivers are making extra to be working in difficult conditions. And the people who are most probably hurt by those surges are people who have no choice but to take rideshare, not necessarily people coming home from the bar, but people trying to get home from work in time and before their kids' bus comes.
Yeah, interesting. Lakeisha, how does it fit into, you know, your idea of what you want to do long term? I mean, this has been more than 5 years now. You've been doing this for the almost all of the time that ridesharing's been in Rochester. Is this something that you want to continue to do?
I like the convenience of it. For right now, for what I do until business picks up for me, I actually find it kind of enjoyable. It could be actually very therapeutic in some ways for both driver and the passenger, depending on what's going on. I've had a lot of people give me information and tell me things about their lives just to get something off their chest. So in essence of in regardless to pay, it is very difficult at times because you do see the difference, like she said, in surges when it's raining or snowing. It's not that much of a difference that we're getting paid. However, if you're looking at it from more of a standpoint of moral and ethical and being able to assist somebody in just hearing them out on a daily basis, I find it very helpful for both the passenger and myself. Just this morning, she referenced the price difference, I picked someone up who said that she had to be late for work because at one point it was $55 to get from one end of the city to the next. Yeah, yeah. And she said she had to literally wait and be late for work because it was so high for her. So it's typically people who we're all trying to make ends meet, but we don't have it because on one end, it's, you know, costing an arm and a leg just to get to work, but you still have to utilize the service in order to get to work. So in essence, it's kind of helpful when there is a price surge for us drivers, but then it's also not beneficial for the passenger. So it's kind of a give or take. But as far as for me, I enjoy what I do. I enjoy it. Only under certain circumstances, I'm like, what's going on type of thing.
So, Are most people pretty okay to pick up and...
Pretty much. I've never had too many issues in the 5.5 years other than this morning, which was an interesting morning for me. So...
Are you able to elaborate on that?
I am able to elaborate. It was my first ride. Typically, I don't do 6:30 in the morning. I told you I have a class at 6. Yeah. And my person canceled. So get to the ride. I'm parked on the street. The street is the first house is basically where the passenger is coming from on the street. Literally, she gets in. So as we're pulling off, our car is coming behind us quite fast. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? So I, you know, pretty much let them go. They make a right in front of us. As she makes the right, I make the right, and then stop. She starts backing up. I'm like, okay, what's going on? I know I don't have any problems with anybody. So I back up. They start getting out of the car. two females. So I'm like, okay, what's going on here? So I'm like, is this you? Because I know I don't have any issues with anyone in there, and she's not saying nothing, the passenger. So as I'm backing up, the girls go back to the car. I put it in drive, going forward. They get out again. So I wind my window down, and she was like, tell your passenger to get out the car. So I'm like, okay. I'm like, look, I don't have anything to do with this. This has nothing to do with me. So, like, you need to solve this on your own time. So I tell the passenger, I'm like, look, you got to go, because I'm not going to put myself in danger. So they get back into the car. I make a right. As I make the right, the driver cuts me off, literally drives fast in front of me and cuts me off. And so there's a bus. She cuts me off. So I'm literally stuck. So I'm trying to go back. There's a car behind me. I can't do anything. So I wind the window down. I'm like, look, I have no problem with you. I don't know what's going on. She was like, I drove 4 hours for this, she said. So she's coming from Pennsylvania. So whatever issue she has, that's where she's coming from. She says she has something to do with my baby. That's all I knew. So as I'm parking, trying to get out the way, She literally comes around the door of the passenger on the backside, opens the door, and really starts to hit the passenger in the face, like literally right there. And so I'm just like in awe of like, what do I do now? Because there's nothing I can do. I'm not going to put myself in danger. So as they're fighting in the car, at some point they get out. So I get out, literally close my door. And at this point, I'm able to drive off because I have a better, you know, my mind is a little bit more calmer. So I drive off. Her phone is still in the car, the passenger. Ugh. So I hear someone saying, hello, hello. So I'm like, your loved one or whoever you're on the phone with, I said, she just got into an altercation with two girls that just literally kind of pulled up on her for no reason. I have no idea what the reason is. He asks me where the location. I tell him the location. She literally, I dropped her off, I picked her up literally from around the corner from where this is occurring. So I'm able to drop her phone off, and there's someone at the house waiting at the door, basically, so I can, I don't know if they thought she was coming back, but I was able to give her phone back and her charger, and I left. So that was the first time that has ever happened to me, any experience like that with Lyft or Uber. So That was this morning.
First time in five and a half years. Did it shake you up a little bit?
I wasn't scared. After the fact, I was like, what the... WTF. I was like, that's crazy. I feel like I needed a drink after that happened this morning. So yeah, first time in 5.5 years.
When you drive at night, 7 to 11 shifts, certainly there's got to be some people who've been drinking.
I normally don't try not to do that time frame. I used to do more of that time frame prior to COVID. I used to do up until maybe 2-3 in the morning.
I gotcha.
Never had any issues.
Oh, wow. So that late. Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't have issues, but I imagine you ended up picking up people from bars.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's part of the point of this. I mean, it's to make sure people are not driving. So if people were not violent, that's a good thing. Were people inebriated?
You still get some people who are inebriated. But typically, if you're a people person and you know how to handle people.
Yeah.
Things don't go. There's no problem.
Sure.
And even when they're drunk, if you stand firm and kind of in yourself, people kind of understand that and don't really bother you. So I don't really have issues with people too much.
Jess, have you had any challenges, troubles, experiences? I don't know if anything like what you just heard, but...
You know, it's funny because passengers ask this all the time, usually people who are in from out of town. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people are surprised when a woman is driving Uber. They want to know if you feel safe. And my passengers very rarely make me feel unsafe for myself. But that story reminded me that there have been a few occasions in the almost 3,000 rides I've done that I have been scared for a passenger. I've witnessed what I consider to be domestic violence. Where a couple has gotten in the car and they're like the way that we responded to each other concerned me. You know, I have a social work background and I work as a community facilitator, so I teach people community skills. So, you know, for the most part, I find it can be really therapeutic to have conversations with people. Sometimes I have information that can be helpful for people because I have community connections. Sometimes people have great connections for me. I've gotten jobs from my other line of work through Uber before. But those rides are the ones that sit with me and are the most unsettling for me, are ones where I'm scared or worried for a passenger. because I'm not quite ever sure what to do with that information. We don't have enough personal information about passengers to really do a whole lot. I don't personally believe much in calling the police when it comes to, that's my personal belief thing, but also I don't think that there's a situation where it would be helpful in most of these cases. And, you know, I'm impacted by that. It, you know, I think about community members and what they might be needing and how little we can do as drivers because we also have to keep ourselves safe. I've canceled rides on my way there because of weird conversations I've had with the person where I'm now worried that I'm putting myself in a dangerous situation and I'm now worried about the passenger, but I can't put myself in danger. And then the other thing is I got myself Narcan trained within the first 6 months of driving because I picked somebody up and it was clear to me that they were fading out. And it occurred to me that, I need to be prepared for our community social problems.
Have you had to administer Narcan
before? I have had to administer Narcan on one occasion. Wow. And I always have it in the car. And good job for the county for making it so available because I can go get another one. I've also just given it out to passengers. You know, you can find yourself in situations with passengers where you're like, you know, it's likely this person, if they themselves or someone in their circle might need Narcan. So I ask them if they have it and hand it out and then go grab another one.
I think listeners are probably familiar with Narcan, but it is a drug that is meant to halt a life-threatening overdose as it's happening. And I don't want to say it's perfect. It's certainly not, especially with all the fentanyl out there, but it can work. It can save a life in the moment. So, yeah. Wow. So that's kind of heavy, some stuff there. But our guests are talking about their experience in ride sharing. We're going to talk about pay coming up in just a moment here. Let me grab a phone call from Bonnie in Rochester, who I think has a question about how some of this works. Hi, Bonnie. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah. I'm not a regular user of Uber, but I know someone who was a driver for a while. And one of the things that I wasn't aware of, and I wonder if it's still in practice, is that the shall we say, the assessment by the system that the Uber is working for, that part of that is the degree to which the customer gives a positive response to the driver. And that's somehow done in numbers. In other words, you get a 2, 3, 4, or 5. Is that still being done?
I know with Lyft, you do have the opportunity to rate a customer. Anything 3 stars or less, if you rate a passenger, that you don't get paired with them anymore. So, yes, that still happens. I'm not really sure with Uber as I'm just new with Uber and how it works with Uber. But I know Lyft does have that opportunity where you can actually rate a passenger and even leave a note to say, you know, what occurred during the ride so that you don't have to be paired with that individual again.
Okay. Anything to add there, Jessica?
I was actually instructed to sign up for Lyft because of that. Exactly. It doesn't seem to me that there's very much that can be done with Uber to not be paired with passengers anymore that make you uncomfortable. And with Uber, as far as like how the rating impacts you, we are told by through this like rating system and this like tier level that your rides will be impacted by how many rides you accept, which is supposed to stay above 70%. So 70% of the jobs that they send you, they want you to take. And then also your rating will matter. But I haven't had my rating shift enough that I've actually been able to see that in practice. And I'm not completely sold that it is impacting the rides. So because I have stopped doing that where I accept more than 70%, my acceptance rate is very low, and it doesn't seem to be impacting my rides, the amount of rides I'm offered at all.
So. And on the flip side of that, the passenger also has the opportunity to rate the driver for Lyft. If they feel uncomfortable at some point with the driver doesn't go well, they also have the opportunity to rate the driver. And the driver rating does go down, fluctuates. But that's also could be a negative thing because I've had that happen to me where someone literally lied and said I had broken glass and I was able to drive like that Monday. But Lyft said that they tried to get in contact with me on a Sunday. And I'm like, no, you didn't, because I didn't get a call. I didn't get an email. And you allowed me to drive up to 4 hours on Monday. And that's when I stopped. And then literally I'll go back to kind of check, you know, my stuff for the day, and they deactivated my account. And so when I finally got in contact with someone, it was like, yeah, you have, someone reported you as having broken glass. And I'm like, why would I have broken glass and be driving? And you just literally let me drive, you know, yesterday. So it works sometimes against the driver, because people can literally lie just to get, you know, some free rides or something like that. So
Dallas is asking, how many miles do they add a year on their cars?
So my car actually is kind of old right now. It's a 15-year-old car. I've had it for 12. Right now I'm at 228,000 and miles, and it's still going. So I get my oil change probably every 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. So it's literally, so that's 3,000 miles. I'm probably adding easily, so it's average 15 a year, probably double or triple that a year.
So 3,000, 4,000, I'm doing a little bit of math here, so close to 50,000 miles a year? Okay. Jessica?
I put, between my job that requires travel, like my full-time job as a community habilitation provider and Uber, I put 100,000 miles in my car in a year.
In a year, 100,000.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I change my, I drive a Toyota, so I change my oil every month, and it's a 6,000, you know, after 6,000 miles.
Sure.
So sometimes it's 2 months, but it's usually once a month I change my oil, you know, and then I'll get the, it's funny because like the Valvoline sends you the letter, like they're way off. They send me the letter like 6 months after I change it again.
So fit into Dallas's contention here is, you know, Dallas is wondering, does $26 an hour pay enough to replace the car every few years? Let's talk about the pay situation, and let's talk about what our guests who are both rideshare drivers, Lakeisha Smith and Jessica Fleming, you know, how you kind of budget for the fact that part of what you're doing to make money is going to cost you for repairs and other needed expenses, sometimes a brand new car. So NPR is reporting on the recent settlement. They write that state investigators found that in New York, Uber and Lyft were taking sales tax and other fees out of the paychecks of drivers, when really that should have been billed to passengers. So that meant rides were less expensive, but it also meant drivers received smaller paychecks. To resolve that, the company says up to 100,000 drivers in New York will be eligible for back pay. They'll be compensated from this new $328 million fund. The Attorney General's office in New York calls this the state's largest ever wage theft case. And this is some of what Letitia James, the AG of New York, said, quote, for years, Uber and Lyft systematically cheated their drivers out of hundreds of millions of dollars in pay and benefits while they worked long hours in challenging conditions, end quote. And so this settlement includes Uber's got to pay $290 million. Lyft has to pay $38 million. The money will be distributed to current and former drivers. The companies have also agreed to provide drivers outside of New York City with paid sick leave and give drivers outside of New York City a new minimum wage of $26 an hour. That's part of the settlement. Jessica, I'll start with you on this. How much does this impact what you do?
The last couple of months, with the last shift in like Uber pay, I have seen such a huge drop in how much I'm taking home that I have been kind of just like holding on and keeping my account active and working between clients for January, because I knew this was coming, because $25 an hour to me seems reasonable. But what I'm making right now, when I'm taking home $20 an hour, and that doesn't include the gas I'm spending, the mileage for the car, the depreciation of the car, you know, like those oil changes that we now are doing monthly. If I had to buy a new car, what I would be paying monthly for the car, like I would lose, the car would lose its like depreciate so fast that I can't imagine how someone would make a new car payment without essentially losing their car before the car is done.
Yeah.
So yeah, these are things I think about all the time. And I think about drivers who this is their full-time gig. You know, they don't have, you know, another job or skill that, you know, like they can switch to when Uber suddenly changes its policy and how pay is being distributed. Drivers don't have a whole lot of, you know, seat at the table in negotiation with the way that these rideshare companies interact with both their drivers and their riders.
If this didn't happen, would you be able to keep doing what you're doing?
No.
So this change will allow you to keep rideshare driving?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Exactly. I can't afford to, I mean, I drive a very affordable car in that it is an older Yaris. So I get 40 miles to the gallon. So that's like an advantage I have over some drivers, and I don't have a car payment. But, you know, I can put 100,000 miles on my car and my great literary engine is doing okay. But when it comes time for a new car without a rate, a increase in pay, I can't justify the depreciation on a car with the amount of miles that we put on and how little it was. We were making.
Yeah. Okay. Do you trust the companies to just say, okay, well, the settlement, we got to pay out. Some drivers will get part of the settlement. All the drivers will get $26 an hour. I think when you're driving someone, right? $26 an hour. I don't think it happens when you're waiting. So that's an important distinction as far
as I
understand.
I think the way I understand it, it's when you're driving to a ride or while driving. So if you are sitting idle, like there's a lot in the airport, that doesn't count.
Okay.
But any other time.
But I'm curious to know, Jessica, if you think that Uber and Lyft will say, well, we lost this case, so
I doubt it.
Enjoy better pay. Do you think that the company will find an end around on this?
Or, yes.
What do you think is going to happen?
I'm not sure if they're going to reduce the amount of drivers that they allow to be on the road as a method to make up for the fact that they had to pay everyone a living wage, but that would be my first guess. But they adjust the way that they pay people, the incentives, how they handle things like an increase in business, what they call a surge, in the way that that they make the most profit no matter what. Like that's kind of their deal. So I don't have a lot of faith that they will say, you know what, we really have been mistreating people and we're going to do better. that's just not how companies work or any corporation works, really.
Yeah, and the chief legal counsel for both companies, Uber and Lyft, declared this a victory for workers. And I wonder if you read that thinking, wait, you're on our side? I mean, like, I wonder how you read that, Jessica.
Yeah, I mean, an increase, a minimum wage is good for workers. I agree. I just don't have a ton of faith in the companies to play fair.
Lakeisha Smith, you've been doing this for 5.5 years, and this is supposed to change the game for drivers. How much will this change your situation?
I guess I don't take it, I don't know, personally like that, only because I feel like I know what I'm in. I know that there's a chance that things will change at any given moment, just like this morning, life happens. And you got to figure out how to adjust to those circumstances. I enjoy driving. It's definitely you could see the shift in changes because Lyft definitely does not offer as many bonuses as they used to offer for the drivers. I haven't seen a bonus in quite some time. And that is frustrating because when you're at a certain level, I know with Uber, I think you get to a platinum or diamond level, but with Lyft, you get to a platinum level and they give you perks. And I haven't seen those perks as a platinum driver. So that's frustrating because if I'm out on the road driving and I'm doing this, you know, more than other drivers, I would appreciate or love to see, you know, an increase in pay or a bonus opportunity that comes around, and it just doesn't happen anymore. So when I say I don't take it personal, I just figure out a way to adjust to the situation accordingly and move forward from there. There's really not much you can do. Just like if you're in a corporate job, really, what can you do? But either, you know, play the game or, you know, find something else to do. So that's kind of how I look at it.
Is the higher pay going to immediately impact your life? I don't think so. You don't think so?
I don't think so because, again, there's a lot of wear and tear in your car. You have to put in for gas or think about gas. I am at 93 premium, so I have to, you know, pay a higher rate in gas, which, you know, is horrible versus regular gas. So it really won't make a difference, but in the end, it still helps. If you are choosing to do rideshare and not go, you know, back to your typical 9-to-5 job, then you have to take what comes with it, unfortunately, as far as pay.
Yeah. One other note on pay before we move into the subject of safety and community impact here is Dallas writes to say that, you know, he doesn't really think workers are getting exploited because if you don't like the way they're treating you, you should quit. So let me ask both of you about that. You know, you describe companies that, you know, Jess, you say this supposed win, the settlement that the AG got. Yeah, it's a win. There's going to be some back pay for drivers who should have had the pay before. There's going to be a higher wage rate. But you don't trust that the company's just going to kind of eat it. You think that they're going to find ways to recoup it, whether it's customers will now pay more or find ways to take it out of what you're paid. So it doesn't feel like a great situation for workers. So Dallas is saying, why don't you quit? What's the answer?
You know, well, I mean, that's, I guess that's always the question, right, when it comes to workers' rights. You know, it's about who has the power. So if you are relying on rideshare to pay your bills, I talk to other drivers sometimes where, you know, like me, they have kids and on a varying schedule, so they need the flexibility. Or maybe it's just that, you know, like with your skill level, education level, like this is the best money you can make. I mean, does that person really have a choice the way that a company has a choice? I would argue no. You know, one of the things about this line of work is that it is by pretty isolating. Like there's rarely an opportunity, you know, to, you know, get together and unionize. We do have, you know, a company sponsored, like you can join up to talk to a crew member, you know, which is someone who they have chosen to kind of represent the company. So I guess this would be kind of like talking to HR. But, you know, compared to other corporations I've worked in mostly the not-for-profit sector. I don't consider Uber especially to be at all like a worker friendly place, but I would put it in the same spot that I would put most of the gig economy business. You know, there isn't a lot of protection, but if you're doing it as your part-time gig, maybe that doesn't impact you as much as somebody who needs that work full-time.
It sounds like what you're saying is a lot of people are doing it because they don't see a lot of other alternatives.
Yes.
But don't blame the workers.
Right.
Okay. How do you go ahead, Lakeisha?
I think some people do it because it is definitely supplemental to their income, and it does help with them going into that knowing it's supplemental income and what comes with it. There's an understanding that this may not last long. There's an understanding that I know that it's going to affect or put wear and tear on my car, and I have to take the good with the bad type, you know, situation. So I think if you go into it with that expectation, then you don't have this where it's like, okay, on a corporate or nonprofit level where you have this, I demand this, I want this, and I'm expecting this in return. I just, personally for me, I don't feel that way. I mean, I can get out of it at any point in time and try to find work elsewhere, but there's other gig opportunities out there if you don't like Lyft or Uber. You know, there's definitely plenty others that you can go for and make, you know, similar amounts of money. Just so, you know, kind of put all your eggs in one basket.
When we come back from our only break, I want to talk a little bit about some of the claims that were made early on. We've been talking about how workers are doing, and Uber and Lyft lost a recent case that we've been talking about, and we'll see how they respond to that going forward. Ostensibly, it's going to be better for drivers, better for workers. We'll see. The company has also promised safer communities, fewer DUIs, less drunk driving, and there's some interesting data about that, and I want to talk about some of the impact on everything from the bar community to just public safety. We'll come right back with Jessica Fleming, Lakeisha Smith, here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, how do you make sense of the economy as 2023 draws to a close? There are some positive indicators, but there are also some troubling signs. Workers are more aggressively seeking better jobs and higher pay, but are they finding them? Where's the wage gap? What about the unemployment rate? The Dow is at its highest level ever. What do we make of that? We'll talk about the economy next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. More than 100,000 people in this country died in alcohol-related crashes between 2010 and 2019. 100,000 people in a decade. And there's a New York City-based study that was recently cited by the New York Times. In four boroughs of New York City, excluding Staten Island, there has been a 25 to 35% reduction in alcohol-related car accidents since Uber came to town in 2011, as compared to other places where ride-hailing companies don't operate. Collecting data from multiple studies, a professor of epidemiology at Columbia University's School of Public Health in New York City, that's Christopher Morrison, he reviewed 20 different studies that examined ride-sharing, 14 that were peer-reviewed, 6 that were unpublished as to date. 17 of the 20 studies find a link between ride sharing to a lower level of alcohol impaired driving and alcohol related crashes in that community. And 3 of those 20 were not in the United States, so they're pretty wide ranging. However, he also notes in his paper that ride sharing appears to have important costs too. In places where ride sharing is available, there seems to be an increase in overall alcohol consumption, the number of assaults, and pedestrian crashes. So it's important to weigh any benefits of ride sharing against any possible costs. So In the macro, it does look like it reduces drunk driving. I'm waiting for data from New York State. I gave folks from the New York State Assembly all of like 3 hours today, so it's not their fault that I don't have data. But we will try to collect that and just kind of get up to date on that. But these studies are positive with some of these caveats. Just briefly, Jessica Fleming, any surprise at that? I mean, it's not a surprise to me that drunk driving would at least be reduced in some way with this, right?
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I imagine that the decrease in cost for being able to ride share versus taking a taxi, but also the convenience, being able to order one on the moment and have someone come right away, is probably makes a big difference for a lot of people who would choose to go to the bar to drink. It's not necessarily the time of day that I am choosing to drive, but yep, that has to do with my own fear of drunk drivers. So other drivers on the road, you know, there's statistics about how your chances of being hit by a drunk driver while driving at night. And that's what is my hesitation for driving, you know, at the time of night. But I mean, I know drivers make the most money if they're willing to work yeah. in the bar hours.
Yeah, totally understand. What do you think, Lakeisha?
I definitely think that there is a decrease. I pick up plenty of passengers that actually have had DWIs, and they have to do rideshare now because of the DWI. And it's worth taking rideshare versus having to spend tens of thousands of dollars to fight a DWI case. And I think more and more people are understanding that and calling rideshare companies to pick them up at, you know, late night hours. So I definitely understand the decrease and think it's smart for people to utilize it for sure.
Well, and I have Simone Boone on the line, the owner of Apogee Wine Bar on Park Avenue. And Simone, I'm curious to know from a business perspective what you've seen since the advent of ride sharing here in Rochester.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for having me. It's wonderful for us. I mean, you overhear the conversations, you overhear people saying, you know, where they might have in the past, you know, left a little earlier and said, no, I'm driving. I, you know, not going to stay. Now they're saying, you know what, I've got a ride share, so I'll stay and have another drink. And, you know, we prioritize safety first, of course. So it's great to see that people are making this decision to, you know, get dropped off, versus choosing to drive their car and then, you know, maybe taking that risk of having another drink and thinking they'll be fine. I think less and less people are making that poor choice now, which is wonderful. Another unintended probably benefit for us as well, just being a city business, is that we don't have parking. And I think, again, especially with our harsh winters here, people think twice before they, you know, I got to deal with parking. It's cold outside, you know, just never mind.
Yeah, yeah.
And now they're like, oh, I've got Uber will drop me off at the front door and pick me right up. Yeah, let's go out. So for us, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm thinking about, I don't want to go on a whole rant about Rochester's public transportation or lack thereof. But, you know, I mean, it is remarkable living in a city where just about everybody thinks that you ought to be able to drive directly to wherever you're going, park right in front, and walk right in. And that is the culture we've talked about a lot on this program. It probably has to change at some point. It's not a very healthy culture for a city to have. But I think the point that you're making, Simone, as a business owner who doesn't have, you know, parking in a big lot or a garage, is that this is just another option. Now, I'm sensitive, Simone, to some of the emails I'm getting, which is like, hey, we had taxis before ride sharing, which I get. And I want to honor that and respect that. But, it certainly wasn't on everybody's phone, a taxi app. And it's just a different kind of culture there, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the usability is completely different. I remember there's a few times where I've tried to call a taxi for a guest that needed one. And, you know, if it wasn't the right time of night, I couldn't get through. It felt sketchy. Is this even, you know, a taxi number? You know, just, again, having a person's face and license plate that you can check, you know what I mean? I think, especially as a woman, gives me a greater sense of safety and that there are checks in place than just hailing a car on the street, which, you know, it's Rochester. It's not like taxis were, even when we had taxis, it's not New York City. They weren't, you know, left, right, and center where you could just walk out and find one. You might be standing outside somewhere cold for, you know, who knows how long, waiting for this ghost car to come. So I don't remember that being a great solution.
You want to jump in, Lakeisha?
Yes, because she mentioned having a woman driver, and I find that a lot of women are more comfortable with a woman driver. Mm. I know Lyft just added this new feature where it's called Women's Connection. And I don't know how it works right now on the passenger side, but as a driver, you are able to either click on, you know, plus or minus if you just want primarily women passengers. I'm okay with both male and, you know, female passengers, but I believe the passengers do have an option to say, okay, I just want a female driver. So that's something that's really good that they just added. I think that's a positive feature that that is important for the passenger in the Lyft community to know that they feel safer with the woman driver as opposed to a male driver.
Yeah, Jess, you want to add to that?
Yep. I was thinking the same thing when we would talk about the gender aspect, that you can sign up. I am signed up to be paired with drivers who would prefer a female driver, a woman driver. And then also with Uber, I'm signed up for Uber Teen. You know, there's like an extra background check, but I'm already through it all for my other job. But so 13 to 17 year olds can ride with drivers who've gone through like some extra scrutiny, I guess. So if you had to get your teenagers across town, like for practice or something, you can know that that driver has been screened extra for whatever, you know, like child related stuff.
This strikes me as a really smart evolution in ride sharing. Because, of course, there's going to be some people, some women who would rather a woman driver, specializations. I mean, all of that makes sense. Lakeisha, would you?
I have a friend who used to drive Uber, and he had an experience one time where he had someone literally put a baby in the car, closed the door, and had to take the baby to the next destination without...
What?
Yes. Like, these are stories that literally people don't hear. So, luckily, he was able to take... the child to the next destination safely. The mom was upset, but basically the father put the child in the car, closed the door, and he had to take, you know, the child to the next destination with the hopes of, you know, someone being there to get the child. And so there's all types of loopholes, unfortunately, but overall I think it's a better experience in some situations.
Before I let Simone Boone, the owner of Apogee Wine Bar on Park Avenue, go, a couple questions. When people are either at Apogee or if they're getting in touch with you, do they ask about parking? How often does that come up, Simone?
Oh, it comes up all the time. You know, I also have a rant, so I'm not going to go off on my rant, you know, but I think many people are just used to it. As you said, it's part of our culture here. And I have to apologize and just be very patient. And, you know, because sometimes I understand they've been driving around for a little while. Again, it's cold. They might be a little wet and cold. And so they come in and they're still holding on to those feelings of, why don't you have parking? I just had to walk a block. And, you know, so sorry. We'll welcome you in with a glass of wine. So again, I am very grateful.
Walk a block. Here's a glass of wine for walking a block. We are so soft. We are so soft.
I agree. So I'm thankful for Uber that helps us out there.
That's amazing customer service. Here's a glass of wine for walking the block. Everybody's going to go to Apogee now and complain about parking. No, please don't. Please don't do that. But please, Simone, the last thing I wanted to ask you is, you know, as a bar owner, what is the situation like for you and your staff when you do suspect someone really shouldn't be driving? And do you initiate conversations? I mean, what's the protocol?
Yeah, it's really tough because there's no winners and people are never happy with you. Of course, if someone has been overserved, you know, obviously we're not overserving people, but you don't know what people have had before they came in, of course.
Sure.
And so if we find ourselves in that situation, we try to be very delicate, but definitely have to start a conversation and just, you know, if they ask for another drink, you bring them a water, you bring them another water, you kind of let them sit and hope they get the idea. And that's kind of the most gentle way that, you know, they slow down and then realize, you know what, I don't need another. That's best case scenario. But a lot of times people are going to be offended. You know, they might be embarrassed in front of their friends and, you know, start demanding and asking questions. But Apogee really isn't that kind of place. I think with the absence of hard liquor, honestly, we don't get a lot of that. It's pretty great, actually. I mean, we've been open almost 9.5 years now, and I can count on one hand, you know, the times that we've had people that got really drunk. I mean, it doesn't really happen. So, you know, people are not ripping shots and it's just not that kind of place. So I'm also thankful for that.
Simone Boone's the owner of Apogee Wine Bar on Park Avenue. Thanks for sharing your thoughts on this. We appreciate you spending a few minutes with us here, Simone.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And we're talking ride sharing here. I want to get back to some feedback from listeners. This is an email from Steven, who says, Evan, I'm a teacher and my spouse drove Uber about 4 months last year. During those 4 months, he was stressed, miserable. He was mistreated constantly, had to put up with all sorts of annoying behaviors, and we were just barely scraping by. Thank God he was able to get a better job. The day he stopped driving Uber, he literally burned his Uber sign in relief. That's from Steven Brighton. That's tough. Steve, I'm sorry that it was not a good experience for you and your spouse, but Jess, you're kind of nodding along there. I mean, you're not burning your Uber sign, so.
I mean, I do think it requires a certain type of personality. Like, I'm guessing that the same people who are like, oh, I did ride share and it was the worst month of my life would also hate bartending, serving. Like in places where you don't have a lot of control over your pay and are front-facing and people are going to take their stuff out on you, it definitely requires a personality, like a certain personality. But one key part there that was kind of, you know, it's the lack of certainty for pay that makes it so stressful for a lot of people. So, you know, if you think of it as like your cup is kind of near capacity, you're trying to pay your bills, you know, maybe you start to hear something in your car and then people are being miserable to you in addition. And then, you know, the next day the Lyft or the rideshare companies change all the rules and you get barred from Lyft because someone said your window was cracked. Like there's like all these things that can happen that impact your day-to-day life that are outside of your control. So, you know, all of that sounds like in the realm of experiences for a driver.
Yeah, I don't have that experience. Even with this morning's experience, I don't feel that way. Like I said, it can be very therapeutic and be fun. Definitely have to have a certain personality. I actually am more of an introverted person. So to be able to have that one-on-one conversation, I think you thrive in certain environments better. So having less people as opposed to being in a group versus one-on-one, conversations flow a little bit better. And then you just have to be open. You have to kind of, like you said, be a people person, understand where people are coming from. Don't be judgmental. I've picked up everyone from a call girl to private pilots. So there's a vast majority of people. Just have to be able to relate, understand, and treat people how you want to be treated. And I feel like once you do that, you have a better connection with people. They tend to be more relaxed. They appreciate you a lot. And you just go from there. Every once in a while, you might run into a jerk, or even you may be having a bad day. So if I'm having a bad day, and I feel that projection going off to my passengers, I literally will stop driving because I know that that energy transfers. So if I'm giving off that negative energy and if it's coming off that way, then I know it's going to be reciprocated in the same way. And so I try to just not drive for a little while and, you know, start over again. That's it.
Well, with our last few minutes, let me ask both of our guests then. The change that's coming in January is higher pay rate or an hourly wage, $26 an hour when they are working at ride sharing. What else do you need to make it a better situation for workers or for yourself? What would you ask for, Lakeisha?
What would I ask for? Better safety features, actually, for Lyft after this morning. I don't really think that they have a lot of safety features. I know Uber has it where you can share your destination with a family member and where you're going, where you're driving to. I think that's a positive thing. If they were able to actually help us with maybe wear and tear on our vehicle, insurance and repairs, that would be great. But I don't really see the difference. I try to judge as far as how much I make within a 4-hour time frame. If I can get to over $100 in 4 hours, that's pretty decent. Lately, Lyft has been lower than that in 4 hours, so it is showing. So I'm hoping that that increases come January. But I mean, I think that's basically it, just getting help with repairs and whatnot. Yeah.
Jess?
You know, I think there are a couple things. I would agree with, like, in most forms of work, if your job is dangerous, the way that Lyft and Uber is, you know, other drivers are dangerous. There is, like, some sort of, you know, protection for that. So, you know, if you get, for God forbid, you got in a horrible accident while driving Uber or Lyft, you Lyft or Uber would cover your passenger, but everything else is on your insurance. Well, we're working for them. So that would be an interesting shift I would like to see. I would love for them to, like, own that, right? So, like, you are covered by them. Your car is covered by them while driving for them. I would need to see that change if I was willing to work at that 2 a.m. Hour. Because if I totaled my car, I'd be out of car and out of work on both jobs. So that would be huge. And then, you know, a seat at the table. It would be really interesting to see if what percentage of the feedback being given by drivers and riders was being taken into account when the changes are being made.
Very true. Very true. I think that's important because they don't tend to listen to, I feel like, the drivers enough to understand what's going on the ground level so that changes can be made and be effective.
Are you confident that those changes will come?
I'm not. But I think that's the gig economy. Like, I wouldn't put that on just Uber or Lyft. I would say that's true for Instacart, Uber, Lyft. Like, every single company that thrives on the need for gig workers is going to exploit that because that's what they do.
Yes.
And it's tough for workers to be at the table and to organize, et cetera. Yeah, yeah. I really appreciate the perspective and the time that Jessica Fleming and Lakeisha Smith have shared as Uber and Lyft drivers. Thank you very much. Jessica, if I need a Lyft, I do hope it's you that I end up with. Or Lakeisha. I really appreciate that. Thank you for doing what you're doing, and thanks for sharing your perspective here.
Thanks for having me.
Lakeisha, thank you very, very much. Our thanks to Simone Boone from Apogee as well. And we've got more connections coming up in just a moment.